I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer health topics in a smart and sometimes counterintuitive way you won't hear anywhere else. Like, what's the least amount of exercise I can do to get the benefits? Which psychedelics can improve my mental health? And how can I check for cancer if I don't have a family doctor? Top experts help me bring you what you need to know in plain language in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I want to hear how you're doing. How the last few weeks have been.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, actually, because my mom sent me a message, and she was like, it's been 29 years today since my brother's death.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, really? And then it just kind of like, wow.
Was and that I never, shock? Was that?
Well, yeah, it just kind of was like, wow, that's a really long time to just, like, be carrying this thing.
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. This is a real-life therapy session between me and a client we're calling Kristen. 29 years ago, from the point that we're recording this session, Kristen lost her younger brother. He died in a way that was tragic and didn't make sense for her, and she wasn't supported through that. And in fact, the reactions that she had around losing her brother didn't seem to be allowed. And so what I'm hearing come up for Kristen as this session starts is that her body was remembering on some level that around this time of year, there is a cluster of losses, and it does something to her nervous system. But what I love about this is her wise body telling her through some sensation, some feeling, I'm remembering something. One of the things we planned on talking about today with you coming in is the death of your brother.
Yeah.
And so with you starting off by telling me about that message from your mom,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how you felt coming here today, knowing that that might be where we head.
I kind of was like, oh, cancel.
Oh, yeah. Like,
Which
was what? Tell me about the inner process.
Oh,
that just, was at play with, you know, that.
I don't know, just the feeling of like, oh, wow, do I really want to like... Because even the reality that like...
Wait, can you finish that sentence? Do I really want to...
Do I really want to confront this?
Okay.
But then there's like, there's this kind of weird balance that's happening because I also was like, it's been 29 years. This feels like enough time, right? Like, it's... So that's kind of what propelled me out the door.
Yeah, so both parts of you. Yeah. Like, I want to move towards this and I don't want to.
I don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which one feels loudest right now?
That I think I'm ready to, like... I don't want to get to the 30th anniversary and still be trying to push all this stuff down. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I see on your face the feeling that comes with saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you can name what's happening inside right now.
Well, probably some of it is kind of another aspect of another side of all of this was that the same time one of my youngest sister, you know, every year makes this big to-do on social media about his death.
Okay.
And I overreact every year and end up having this moment where I end up, like, ranting to my husband about how that makes me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that it's because she didn't experience it. She wasn't even born yet. And seeing someone else so in touch with how they feel about it and being able to share their grief and all of that really makes me angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's because in my own family and the people around me at the time were just not there for me and minimizing.
Does it feel like, how come you're allowed to if I wasn't allowed to?
Yeah. Yeah.
If we dip underneath the frustration and anger, mm-hmm. like a sense of protest around the way you were silenced.
Right. Yeah. And the realization too, like, no one has ever asked me what that was like. They all have their feelings about it and so on.
No one's ever asked me what that was like.
No.
Yeah. What was it like? I really want to know.
Deeply terrifying. And then there's the element that I felt responsible to.
Yeah. I think there are these really special moments that happen in conversation with people where someone actually tells you exactly what they need. And sometimes when I have these moments in therapy, I think about what would happen if we were so attuned to each other socially. If when someone was saying, "Nobody has ever asked about this," instead of just saying, "Yeah, that sucks," or "Oof," or moving on, we take that as a cue that that person is telling us exactly what they need and exactly how we could show up for them in that moment. If we're looking for it, there are these breadcrumb trails about how to be close to each other that we litter all through our language. And if we're paying attention, we can pick them up and it will take us into closeness and it will help us heal each other.
I look at my kids now and I have this tendency to think of myself at that age and put all of the same judgments that I would on an adult. As if everything I was experiencing and did and was like I was a fully formed adult and I wasn't. But it's taken like watching my own kids and seeing how they will handle like the smallest, like not getting, you know, candy or, you know, whatever. Right. It's like, there was a time where you said to me that it made sense that I would have acted that way or acted out or, you know, those things. And that was like, really? Because I've always held all of this stuff around that time. Like, I just was bad. And that how I handled it was bad. I wasn't able to, like, process even really what was happening when it was happening because I was always getting shoved off. So when he actually died, because it was kind of a long process, I wasn't there. And that was a choice my mom made. Because she didn't want to deal with me in this moment. And as a mom, I now don't judge her for that. But it's like this thing just happened, and it went from he was alive in the other room to now he's gone, and like, there's a picture from the funeral, even, and, you know, it's our family, and then just his casket. And I remember wanting to scream and tell everyone he's not dead. Like, you can't do this, because he might not be, and you don't, like, how do you know? And because there was that disconnect for me, I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm going to slow you down right here, just seeing the feeling. And I want us to see if we can stay with it for a moment. What is it that you're making contact with as you tell me about that? That feeling of wanting to scream? Yeah, see your tears.
But this was a hard experience even for the adults around me.
You know what those feelings are? It looks at your on your face like a mix of sadness and confusion. Did I get that right? What do you notice as we slow down into sadness and confusion right now, together here?
It's just thought, like, wanting to run away feeling, right?
It was really hard to stay with. Which makes a lot of sense. These are so uncomfortable. And you just told me about how much you wanted to keep these feelings away.
Like
keeping the story away. And I want to invite that part of you that knows that you want to move towards this to come back into the room here. Just to help us have the courage to stay with this just a little bit longer.
There's also the part that,
can we,
like,
slow down just a moment more? I really want to stay with this before we rush on. And as we turn towards the sadness and confusion, mm-hmm. what do you sense in your body?
Well, there's also a lot of shame.
I hear that. Yeah. You had so much responsibility mm-hmm. on your shoulders.
Yeah, and then I was carrying a really big secret, yeah. at least, that I thought I, you know, had to keep. Because not being able to say goodbye to him the way everyone else was able to really sucks.
Yeah.
But so does the thinking I caused it yes. and having to hide that from people, yeah. right? Because it made it impossible for me to accept any care. Even from the adults, even strangers around me, right, who were trying right. their best.
Yeah, so even in that, even at that age and that yeah. stage, this yeah. belief that you are responsible kept out any of the care that was there.
Yeah.
Being you were 8, is that right?
Yeah.
Eight. Mm-hmm. You think about 8-year-old you feeling responsible for his death.
Yeah. Because it's that particular moment, right, where he was crying and crying and crying and he wouldn't stop. And I just said to him, I hate you.
Yeah. She feels so responsible for her younger brother's death. And that's not because in actuality she participated in his death in some way. There's no scandal here that you need to hear about. But in the way that makes sense for most of us when we're kids, she had a reaction to a younger brother who was crying and in distress and said something to him out of her anger. And it wasn't long after that that he died. In the way that most children do, they don't understand that there are more causes to things that happen in the world besides them. So there's a kind of normative egocentrism that children experience. And when something happens, they don't know that they're not necessarily responsible. Kristen did that too. She saw her anger at her brother and saw that as the cause for his death. And she somehow buried that deep inside of her and felt responsible. Certainly at that time, but in a way ever since. There is also an adult version of you in the room who knows you weren't responsible.
Right. Yeah.
And so that feeling of shame makes me think it's an emotion memory.
Right.
It's the very young part of you who believes that. Yeah. And I'm wondering if the adult you has any feelings towards younger you right now.
A lot of compassion.
Yeah.
That I guess I just wish that I'd known that someone at that moment had told me, right? Yeah. And been present in a way to know that I was struggling.
Yes.
And to have even asked questions, right?
And who you are in this moment would have been the perfect person for that younger version of you to have. And so I'm wondering if we can connect all the compassion and wisdom and insight and care that you have with this younger version of you who needed someone exactly like you.
Yeah.
That feel okay if we try that?
Yeah.
So can you bring to mind your 8-year-old self and all of her shame that she's carrying, that hidden secret inside if someone only knew I'm responsible? And can you imagine finding her somewhere? Where are we going to meet her?
Probably in the woods.
In the woods. Okay. Is that, tell me about that.
Well, after I was pretty isolated so I spent a lot of times in the woods around our house playing by myself.
Yeah.
I think mostly hiding, but just, you know.
Hiding.
From home and even at school, I had to hide a lot.
She makes us want to do that, doesn't it? So this is a big deal, then, if we go find her while she's hiding.
Right, in the safe place, right?
Yeah. So let's imagine you're going back into the forest to find her. And notice how she is as you encounter her. We can start to create some new stories about what it means to be in the world, in a way going back and reorganizing the structure of our psyche or ourself. But you'll see as you listen to this session with Kristen, we do that from a place of compassion. We do that from a place of connectedness to ourself and somebody else, not trying to arm wrestle out from a younger part of us a belief that they held. We go back and we nurture, we release, we care, we love, we unburden. And in doing so, we bring ourselves into connection with ourselves. And the work we're doing here is about bringing everything back into dialogue, all the parts of herself that are tucked away, getting to come to the surface and be loved and released from the burdens they're carrying. And as you go up to her and let her know that you're her, but all grown up, you actually came for her. You don't want her to be hiding and so alone with this heavy burden of shame. And what do you want to say to her?
That what she thinks isn't true.
Tell her.
That it's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
You did not kill your brother.
That's right.
That I'm sorry that, that there's no safe adults in your family.
Mm-hmm. Is there more?
That all the big feelings, all the big emotions are so normal.
Yes. Good. Good. See your breath there. And what happens for her? Can you allow her to take that in for a moment?
There's sometimes when it takes that someone else saying it for you to really realize that there's truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that feels really important.
Imagination is a very powerful tool for neurogenesis, for change on a deep level for us. And we can see from all sorts of imaging studies that our brain gets the experience of actually having done something just by imagining it. And it's not enough for many of us just to tell a person or just to hear from a person that we're not responsible for something that we've blamed ourselves for years. Because it's almost like we have these multiple parts inside of us, these multiple selves that are holding the complexity of our lived reality. And one of her selves is this very, you know, wise adult Kristen who knows it wasn't my fault. But there's also some other something inside of her that is very young, that got formed at that time, that has a very distinct story about her being responsible, and it needs to learn otherwise. But it's not going to be convinced in the same way that an adult brain would be. So although this sounds imaginative and creative, there are some very technical neurophysiological processes at play when we are using this ethereal, magical realm to undo something that got stuck a very long time ago.
And like, it could only take an adult.
Yes.
To say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
For it to be true, right? Or maybe possible that it's true. Right?
Uh-huh.
Because there's that element where there's the distrust of adults that I had, right? Which was earned.
And yet you seem
you're
the exact adult that she could really believe.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you see her in your mind's eye right now, hearing all those things from this trusting adult who is you, how do you know that she really took it in?
Eye contact. There's the forest, and then like the grass grew really long because they didn't want to mow it. It was great to hide in. She's not hiding anymore, right?
That's right. Yeah, and maybe you can make that explicit with her.
She doesn't. Yeah. You don't have to hide anymore.
Yeah. Oh. Can you say that again?
You don't have to hide anymore?
Mm-hmm. What's happening inside? I'm just watching all the emotion on your face saying those words.
Well, there's kind of that. But I do. Like, you know.
And that's her feeling that? Or you as the adult? Yeah. It's her. Can you ask her to tell you more about why she thinks she still needs to hide?
Because I think there's still something about my mom. Like the one person that I really needed. Which gets to that weird thing with my mom and I that's like so deeply unhealthy.
There's a dynamic between Kristen and her mom where Kristen has taken on this responsibility of caregiving for her in more ways than a child should ever have to care for a parent. And it makes it hard for Kristen to be able to have her own experience or to have had her own experience as a child, often leaving her own experience to think about what her mom needed, how to take care of her mom, or to just not feel safe opening up or sharing because of her mom's instability. So she didn't really get mothered in those spaces where she was grieving so deeply.
Like, adult me knows that it's not a healthy relationship and that I don't actually need it in the way that I feel I do. But it's like, it's so layered with all this stuff of having to be an adult for her and having to carry trauma for her and...
Okay. I hear you loud and clear. So let's be with younger you. We're still with 8-year-old you in the forest. Can you release her from that responsibility to parent her own mother?
Yeah, that's like a big one.
Yeah. Do you need some help?
Yeah.
Okay. So can you tell her, and actually it feels important hearing you say some of these things out loud today, so I'm going to say some things to you, and then can you imagine saying them to her? It has never been your job to take care of your mother. Can you say that?
Well, it's really heavy.
Is it too much? Should we start with something a little bit easier? Just, okay.
It's like there's no joy there.
So how about we try this? Can you say to her, you've been given such a heavy load to carry? And how would it be to say it out loud, actually, to, in this room, use your voice to name those things? Yeah, what's going on? As I'm asking you to share some things out loud, I'm noticing like, things feel stuck a little bit.
Probably because she's the parent that I trusted.
Yeah.
And she put me in the position.
Yeah. I really want to invite you to be connected to me right now. You, adult you, and I here in this room together. Right. Noticing what tells you that we're connected to each other right now.
Smell of the room, eye contact.
Okay. And what do you see on my face looking back at you? Really wanting for you to stay with me here.
Connection.
Yeah.
You're smiling.
I am.
You know, like, it's okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
It is okay. And I've got you. And I am not scared. And I'm not stuck.
Right.
And you and I are tethered to each other here. I'm not going to let you get lost.
Right.
In that. How does that feel?
Good.
Good. Okay.
Safe.
Safe. Oops. Okay. Yeah. How would it be for us to imagine bringing 8-year-old you out of the forest and into this room with us?
Okay.
That feels okay. Where is she? There. Okay. And would it be okay if I shared some things with her?
Yeah.
Yeah? I am so glad that you've joined us. It doesn't feel right to think about you hiding in the woods, so alone, with all those big feelings. Although I know why you had to hide, and it makes a lot of sense that you did. We want for you to know that the responsibility that you've been feeling for your brother's death and the responsibility you've been feeling to take care of your own mother don't have to be on your shoulders anymore. You've got two adults in the room who love and care for you, and we're going to help you get through and manage all the big feelings that you have about this. And we're going to figure out a way for somebody else to be taking care of your mom so that you just get to be a kid again.
I think that was the block. It was like, who's going to take care of her then?
Yeah.
As soon as that was like, this release of like, okay.
Good. And I'm seeing your tears as you watch me talk to this part of you.
Yeah.
Can I hear about what those tears are saying?
It's a long time to have had an adult. Yeah. An adult, like, tell me, you know, and I feel kind of happy. Like, that was the thing blocking, you know, that there were other people taking care of her.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah.
To let go of.
Yeah.
It will not be one more thing.
That's right. That's right. Oh, I'm seeing that big breath you just took. So could we for a moment imagine what happens next with her?
Like, she's wondering if she can go play.
Yeah, great. Where's she going to go play?
Probably in the garden.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you going with her?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want parents who are listening to this audio to feel shame or guilt about having their own grief process. If somebody has died, it is so okay for there to be pain and suffering and loss. What happened in the case of Kristen and her family is that that was present for the parents, but Kristen's experience was denied. It was pathologized. It was minimized. She wasn't allowed the space to process the things that she needed to process. And so while I really want for parents to have their own emotional experience around loss and grief, and that is important, and that is a really, really healthy thing, I also want for there to be room for the kids to have their own emotional experience. And if I could go back in time and offer something to Kristen, it would be the presence of an attuned, loving, caring, steady other who could say to her, yes, you're allowed to feel everything that you need to feel and tell me what's going on inside and know this isn't your fault. And she didn't get that, and that's exactly what she needed. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced and edited by Jody Martinson. Mixed and music by Lee Rosevere. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. Arif Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.